So good to see each of you this year and speak to you again. And I like preaching at Hillsboro, and I hope what we're bringing. I prayed and prayed and prayed to God that He would give me what He wants me to speak on today. And I never did receive any peace in my heart about that. But hopefully it is what He wanted me to speak on. I'm going to speak on the subject, wait upon the Lord, if that's up there yet. Wait upon the Lord. Okay. I believe personally that America is at a crossroads. And last November we had an election, and one of these two men were supposed to end up president of the United States as far as the election is concerned. But I personally felt that no matter which one of these men was elected, things were going to really change. And I personally, this is opinion now, I have a right to express my opinion, don't I? My opinion is that I'm ashamed that men like this are the people that our people put forward to lead us. That's my opinion. Because as far as things are concerned, I personally am tired of choosing between bad and worse. I'd like to choose between good and better, at least. But when you realize that these men did not differ very much on the subjects of abortion, and you need to know that it's Pharaohs and Herods. Those are the kind of leaders that put babies to death. And neither one of these men took a strong stand on abortion or the fairness doctrine, illegal aliens with driver's license. Higher taxes, of course, is going to mean higher prices. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. That the homosexuals are going to have more preference than anybody else. Two homosexuals living together can be on the same health policy, but if two normal people that are unmarried live together, they can't be on the same policy. They already have preferential treatment, to be truthful with you. The hate crime and law is probably going to become law. And we're not going to have the freedom of speech that we ought to have. And socialism and the redistribution of America's wealth is right here on us. Bragging. Part of a campaign promise of the man who did win the primacy. The presidency. But the truth of it is, as a Christian, you know, don't you, that if a man doesn't work, neither shall he eat. That's biblical. So when you got abortion and you got homosexuality and you've got, if a man doesn't work, neither shall he eat, and you're going to redistribute the wealth of America, and the generous soul is supposed to be the one made fat, not the one that's receiving. They're not the ones that are supposed to be made fat. And so I just say to you, with all of these things changing so much, this is going to affect our lives, going to affect our children's lives. And the America I grew up with is gone. And what is not gone is soon going to be gone. Well, what I want to do today is I want to admit with you that people are fretting. People are angry and afraid and confused and worried and despairing. Some people are even physically sick because of what's going on in our country. And I understand that. And maybe I'm ashamed that I maybe fret a little bit too much about what's happening to this country. But it hits you right in the pit of the stomach. And if what's going on in America, abortion and homosexuality and everybody living off the government and big government, if that doesn't bother you, it's simply because you don't understand the situation. If what I have just said about abortion and homosexuality and people being supported by people who do work that do not work, if that doesn't bother you, you just do not understand the situation. So I want to address, how do you handle this? Where in the world is God and what's going to happen? And as I said, if you don't have any anxiety at all about this, I just don't think you understand how bad things are in America. But a preacher is supposed to be a preacher of good news, and I don't want to dwell on those things. I want to dwell on the good news. It's found in the book of 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 through 9. A sermon is supposed to be for edification, admonition, and comfort. And so what I'm going to try to do in this sermon is to give you a little bit of comfort. Look at the text. For if God spared not the angels that sin, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, and he spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that afterward should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. For that righteous man, dwelling among them in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. And here's the good news. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptation and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. So if he didn't spare angels, and he didn't spare the old world, and he didn't spare Sodom, he gives those three examples that God does know these two things. And here's the comfort in my proposition. The Lord knows how to deliver his people from adversity, and the Lord knows how to reserve the unjust to the day of judgment. Lot did a terrible thing later on, but I do want you to know it calls him a righteous man and that it vexed his righteous soul. If you're not vexed when you see our nation turning homosexual, if 50 million dead babies doesn't bother you, I doubt your conversion. I don't think you have ever been converted. Those are ungodly things. And those angels that sinned, he cast them down to Tartarus. And Sodom and Gomorrah he destroyed. And it's just absolutely important for us to see that Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed. The twin cities were destroyed. And as the brother said last night, it was not for the fact that they were inhospitable. It was the ungodly deeds that they did. Conversation in 1611 meant manner of life. I hope you're vexed. If you remember that story in the Old Testament about the people that were not sighing and crying for the abominations that were being committed in Jerusalem. In a vision, God saw that those men were all put to death who didn't have a mark of a towel upon their forehead. Those that were sighing and crying for the sins that were being committed, they were spared. But in the vision, the people who were not weeping and crying, those people were killed. You need to be upset about the way this great nation is going. But you need to remember the promise, the proposition. God knows how to reserve the unjust, and he knows how to deliver those who are just. That is a great comfort to me. So let's see if the Bible tells us any other stories that might illustrate those two propositions. Because faith does come by hearing. Whatsoever things are written aforetime was written for our learning, upon whom the ends of the world were come. And Romans 15, 4 talks about us that through the patience and comfort of the scriptures, we might have hope. So does the Bible give any other illustrations that God can reserve the unrighteous, and on the other hand, he can preserve the people that are righteous? First one I want to look at is Joseph. His brothers hated him and sold him into slavery. And he ends up being prime minister down in Egypt. And when they come back, Joseph, testing his brothers, sends him back to get his brother Benjamin. He was already holding Simeon. And we said, we got to take Benjamin back there or Simeon won't get loose and we won't be able to be fed. And we've got to take Benjamin. And listen to what Jacob says. Jacob says, all these things are against me. No, they aren't, Jacob. They're not against you at all. You say Joseph is not, that's because you don't know any better. You don't need to worry about Simeon. You don't need to worry about Benjamin because God has sent Joseph down ahead of time for the famine that's going to come. And Joseph said to his brothers, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good to save many people alive. See, God was aware, God was acting, God was saving his people. He knows how to preserve the godly. Years later, when a king arose who knew not Joseph, Moses is born, and when he's born and he sees his brothers suffering affliction, he says to God, don't you see? Don't you hear? And God didn't say one single word for 40 years. Now, if he had remembered, the promise to Abraham was that his seed was going to, that is Abraham's seed, was going to be persecuted for 400 years. And it was 40 years before those 400 years would be up. And he says, don't you see? Don't you hear? But after he told him to take off his shoes, the ground where you're standing is holy ground, God says, I hear, I hear, I see, I see. We just do not realize that God is in charge. He knows what's going on. And 40 years later, he did deliver them by Moses' hand. And so God delivered them out of Egypt. And so that day they came to the Red Sea. He says, stand back and watch the salvation of the Lord. And they were preserved. And the Egyptians, the Bible says, when they went into the waters returned. And there remained not so much as one of them. See, I'm proving my point. God can preserve the righteous and God can hold the unrighteous for a day of judgment. But they're out in the wilderness and pretty soon they're saying, you brought us out here in the wilderness to die. And so they griped and complained and worried and doubted. And so God says, I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. But Joshua and Caleb, the Bible says, was of another spirit. And those two spies that wanted to go in and take the promised land and go into that land flowing with milk and honey, they got to go in. And they saw the promises that God had given through Moses fulfilled. So that Joseph, or rather Joshua said that day, behold, this day I'm going the way of all the earth. And you know in all your hearts and in all your souls that not one thing has failed of the good things of the Lord spoke concerning you. And all came to pass and not one thing has failed thereof. See, he knows how to deliver. And they did go out of the wilderness, into the promised land. And it was only the doubters, the murmurers, the complainers, those that followed the mixed multitude that weren't converted, that was going along for the ride. Those are the ones that God did not preserve. But then there came a period of judges, 13 of them. Six times you read that the people sinned and they suffered, and then they made supplication, and then God brought salvation. Then they sinned, and then they suffered, and then they made supplication, and God brought about salvation. Six times that cycle repeats itself, and God delivered them from their enemies, punished their enemies, and by means of those 13 judges, he delivered the people of God. Samson was one of them. He married a foreign girl, and his parents were upset and said, why can't you marry a local girl, one of our own people? But have you ever noticed what Judges chapter 14, 3 and 4 says? But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines, for at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. The King James Version does not capitalize the word he. I believe the word he ought to be capitalized because the antecedent is Lord. The Lord sought an occasion against the Philistine. God has to use what he's got available. And sometimes it's someone as wicked as Samson, as immoral as Samson, who I like to think maybe he repented, but you'll notice it says that the dead which he slew at his death were more than they who he slew in his life. So they escaped the Philistines. So over and over and over in the book of Judges, God was proving my proposition. Not that he did it to prove my proposition, but I'm proving the proposition is true. That he'd raise up somebody to deliver the righteous and punish the wicked. Later on, when there were kings, there was Syria came against the children of Israel. And notice what it says in 2 Kings 6:14-18. Therefore sent he their horses and chariots and a great host, and they came by night and compassed the city about. And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, a host compassed the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said unto him, alas, my master, what shall we do? So here's the city surrounded. What are we going to do? Look at all those enemies. And the prophet said, fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them. And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about him. And when they came down to him, Elisha prayed unto the Lord and said, smite the people, I pray thee, with blindness. And he smote them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. He couldn't see the angels of God, the whole armies of God in the sky. And they were there to protect them. Oh, if we could just get our eyes open sometimes and see. There's no need to fear because my proposition's true. He knows how to punish the wicked. He knows how to reward the righteous and to preserve the righteous. We're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against principalities and spiritual wickedness in heavenly places. And so they escape Syria. He can preserve his people. And then Ammon and Moab and Mount Seir, which is the same as Edom, in 2 Chronicles 20, they come up against them. And Jehoshaphat says, thus saith the Lord unto you, be not afraid nor dismayed by reason of the great multitude. The battle's not yours, but God's. See, that's what you got to keep in mind. The battle's not yours, but God's. Tomorrow, you go out against them, and behold, they came up by the cliff of Ziz. And you shall find them at the end of the brook before the wilderness of Jeruel. You shall not need to fight in the battle. Set yourselves, stand still, see the salvation of the Lord with you, O Jude and Jerusalem. Fear not, be not dismayed. Tomorrow you go out against them, for the Lord will be with you. And they arose early in the morning and went forth into the wilderness. And notice what it says. He says, believe in the Lord your God, so shall you be established. Believe his prophets, so shall you prosper. And when he had consulted with the people, he appointed singers unto the Lord, and shall praise the beauty of holiness. And as they went out before the army and say, praise the Lord, for his mercy endureth forever. And when they begin to sing and to praise the Lord, The Lord set ambushments against the children of Israel, Moab and Mount Seir, which were come up against Judah, and they were smitten. Imagine sending out an orchestra before them. You're not going to have to fight this. I'm going to take care of this. The Lord knows how to deliver the righteous, and he knows how to punish the wicked. And so they escaped Ammon and Edom and Moab. Then the Assyrians came up against them. And that's in 2 Kings 18. Then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice in the Jews' language and said, hear the word of the great king, the king of Assyria. Thus saith the king, don't let Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you out of his hand. Neither let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, the Lord will surely deliver us. This city shall not be delivered to the hand of the king of Assyria. And therefore thus saith the Lord, concerning the king of Assyria, he'll not come into your city, nor shoot an arrow there, nor come before it with a shield, nor cast a bank or an embankment against it. By the way they came, by the same shall he return, and shall not come into the city, saith the Lord. For I'll defend the city to save it for my own sake and for my servant David's sake. And it came to pass that night that an angel of the Lord went out and smote the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. 185,000 people. And when they crossed early in the morning, behold, there was nothing but dead corpse. Don't worry about it. He won't even shoot an arrow. He'll go home the way he came, wagging his tail behind him. And 185,000. See, we're not wrestling against flesh and blood. Don't forget that there is a God on the throne. And God knows how to deliver the righteous. However, in the days of Jeremiah, we learn that sometimes God does punish and chastise his own people. The good book says sin is a reproach to any people. And the good book says that all nations that forget God will be turned into hell. And God told Jeremiah, I don't even want you to pray for this nation. Don't make any more prayers for Jerusalem. This whole land, speaking of the people of God's land, this whole land shall be desolate and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. And it shall come to pass when 70 years are accomplished that I'll punish the king of Babylon. And that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity in the land of the Chaldeans will make it perpetual desolation. And I'll bring upon that land all my words which I pronounced against it, even all that is written in this book which Jeremiah hath prophesied against these nations. And he kept telling them, don't you say, that isn't going to happen. Here's the temple of the Lord's here. The temple of the Lord's here. And he says, well, remember what happened at Shiloh? The tabernacle was at Shiloh and the Ark of the Covenant got stolen. So don't you say, we're the people of God, the temple of God's here, nothing's going to happen to our nation. If God did that to his own nation, when they forgot him, turned from him, and forsook him, then he allowed the king of Babylon to be his chastening rod. He even calls Nebuchadnezzar his anointed one. He used the king of Babylon to punish his people. Babylon was used to correct his people. I wonder if America has not forsaken God. Haven't we forgot God? Haven't we kicked him out of our schools? Aren't people wanting to take his name off of our coins and off of our dollars and off of our buildings and destroy any semblance of crosses anywhere? And don't we let it happen? How many letters did you write about abortion to your senators and your congressmen? How'd you vote? Did you vote for men who were in favor? And it looks like a good possibility now, if this health plan goes through, that we're going to pay, our tax dollars is going to pay for abortion. And even when the Republican Party was in lead, and the other gentleman, McCain, he voted to raise how much money is given to Planned Parenthood, which is no more Planned Parenthood than the man in the moon. They're the biggest abortionists in America. Did you say anything about it? Did you vote intelligently? Did you vote like a Christian, or did you vote with your pocketbook? If you voted with your pocketbook, and you voted for what you thought you could get out of this, shame on you. God's going to hold you accountable. God's going to hold this nation accountable. We have forgotten God. And if you think that America cannot be destroyed, I want you to remember that he destroyed his own nation and used him, Nebuchadnezzar, as the chastening rod of his people. It's very possible that this administration or the next administration is the very weapon that God's going to use to destroy this nation. And we deserve it. if we ourselves did not do anything to try to prevent abortion and homosexuality. Every nation that kills its own, its innocence. And every nation that turns to homosexuality, 26 different nations, according to one gentleman, has fallen when they kill their babies and when they turn to homosexuality. And we will not be an exception. All nations that forget God will be turned into hell. And God told Jeremiah, you tell those people, don't even pray for this nation. I have decreed that they're going to go into captivity, and they are going to go into captivity. And if you'll obey me and go surrender to the king of Babylon, you'll live. But if you rebel against the king of Babylon, if you refuse this spanking, you're going to die. And that's what Jeremiah preached. No matter that. You don't like what I'm saying? They didn't like what Jeremiah said either. The only difference is he was inspired and I'm not. And I'm praying that I'm wrong. But if that comes, here's what I want you to know is the good news. God knows how to punish the wicked. And he knows how to preserve the righteous. And even when God destroys the nation of his people on an individual basis, God still knows how to preserve his people. There's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Here's the good news. They are going to not bow to that idol. So they, God made, let us die. But he says, if so be our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But he says, if you don't, that's okay. But he did deliver Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Daniel then was the king exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him because he believed in his God. I mean, Daniel spoke to the local Lions Club, but I'm telling you, he was preserved. Now, I want you to keep in mind, though, very important to understand, that he obeyed the king of Babylon and Persia and the Medes. He served in three administrations, not just different presidents, different nations. But when it come right down to obeying God or obeying man, yes, he obeyed God. But since he knew the destruction of Jerusalem was the will of God, then he surrendered himself and showed great respect to the king of Babylon. And then there's the case of Mordecai. In the case of Mordecai, all the Jews were to be killed. And God is ahead of schedule. Here he's got this beautiful young lady. They're mourning among the Jews and fasting and weeping and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes because Haman had decreed to kill all the Jews in the world. As if the devil seemed to say, well, I've been trying to get them, and now I'm just going to kill the Jews. Because some had gone back, if you remember, had gone back to Jerusalem and started to restore the law like Ezra. Nehemiah began to rebuild the walls. Zerubbabel went back as a governor. But this good old girl, Esther, God already had her there. And you'll remember the story. Esther went in and she delivered the children of Israel. When Mordecai said to her, how do you know whether you were born or come to the kingdom for such a time as this? See, he had Joseph down in Egypt. We're ready for that. Now he's got Esther here, who's got influence on the king. God knows what he's doing, and he uses individual. But even when he punishes a nation, here's where I take comfort. He can still use me. He can still use you. I can still be a Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I can still be a Daniel. I can still be a Jeremiah, and he will protect me. I may go in a pit, like Jeremiah, but I'm telling you, he can have me brought out of the pit. I may end up in a lion's den, but he can deliver me. I may be thrown in the fiery furnace, but he can deliver me. My point is, we're going to go through some hard times. And what it's going to take is a resolution on your part that I'm going to stay true. I'm going to obey God. And if God does deliver this nation into judgment, which I think he will do, because there's no nation that's ever been blessed like this nation, I believe we will lose our freedom of speech. I believe we'll lose our freedom of religion. I believe you're going to lose your guns. I believe that we're going to lose those things. But the good news is God is going to be with us as individual persons. He knows how to preserve the righteous and to punish the wicked. So Esther went in, and she exposed that wicked man Haman, and Haman just hung around. Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him have they hanged upon the gallows, because he laid his hands upon the Jews. The Jews were his people. He laid his hands on them, and God saw his end. And as I said, Nehemiah's rebuilding the walls. Ezra's teaching the law. Zerubbabel's the new governor. They're back home in Jerusalem, and he gives the children of Israel a second chance. And later, he sent a Savior into the world. This time, not just to save your men's physical lives, but he sent his son into the world. The statement was, I'm going to send a prophet like unto Moses. If you listen to him, you'll be saved. You don't listen to him, you won't be saved. And it's an amazing thing to realize that these people did get a second chance. And Christ came, and then the Christians that believed on Jesus, they began to suffer terribly. But again, God delivered his people, many of them, from the Jews and from the Romans. But remind you, some Christians died. Some Christians suffered. Some were devoured by lions. And it's a very important thing to realize that even though many people died, still the church was triumphant. Paul himself was given time in prison to write those letters that give us so much comfort. And in 70 AD, finally, because they rejected that prophet like unto Moses, Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans. On the very anniversary, on the very same day of the year, same month, same day, as the destruction of the temple by the Babylonians, on the anniversary of that, the temple was destroyed, according to Josephus, on the very same day. They rejected that prophet, and they ceased to exist as a nation. 100,000 of them escaped the destruction of Jerusalem, not counting the Christians that obeyed Jesus, and when they saw Jerusalem surrounded with a great army, they got out of there. And so the Christians escaped. The historians tell us not one Christian died in the destruction of Jerusalem because they took Jesus serious. When you see the abomination of desolation, when you see Jerusalem encompassed with a great army, clickety-clack, don't look back. And they ran out of the city and they were destroyed. What had God told Israel? If you reject that prophet, if you don't listen to me and obey me and that prophet, I'm going to do to you what I did to the seven nations that was in the Holy Land before you. What happened to those seven nations? They ceased to exist as a nation. And I know there's a lot of radio preachers that want you to think that what happened in 1948 was the fulfillment of prophecy. But I'm here to tell you that's not true. Absolutely not true. You couldn't prove today you were a Jew if you had to, especially that you were of a particular tribe. They were destroyed because they rejected the prophet like unto Moses and what happened to the seven nations that was in the land when they went into the Holy Land happened to Israel, and there was 100,000 of them that were saved. They sold 90,000 of them into Egypt, like Deuteronomy 28 prophesied would happen to them. They couldn't sell the other 10,000, and so they killed them. And the women were raped, and they intermarried, and it would be impossible today for anyone to claim that they are the Jewish Messiah, because a guy today cannot even prove he's Jewish. The oldest Jewish family in the world is the DiSolo family, and they can only trace their lineage back to 920 AD. God destroyed that nation. And he used Rome. Listen to what he says in Matthew. Fill ye up the measure of your fathers, you serpents, you generation of vipers. How can you escape the damnation of hell? Wherefore, behold, I say, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes. Some of them you'll kill and crucify. Some of them you'll scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city, that upon them, or upon them may come all the righteous blood, from the righteous blood of Abel. That's the first martyr in the Old Testament, unto Zacharias the son of Berechias. That's the last martyr in the Old Testament, when you slew between the temple and the altar. Verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. And it did. That nation forgot God, and it was lost. The book of Revelation shows that God removes even churches. He removed the candlestick. I have somewhat against thee. And he removed the candlestick of some of those churches. And the book of Revelation ends by showing all of the enemies of God surrounding the church. And listen to what it says. This is all the enemies of God. And they went up on the breadth of the earth, and they compassed the camp of the saints. That's the church, the beloved city. That's the New Jerusalem. That's the beloved city. And fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. God knows how to deliver the righteous and preserve the unrighteous to judgment. Well, every sermon's got to have a so what. And so here's the so what. Worst case scenario. What if we do come to the place that God says, America has sinned so far, no intercession is going to be accepted. What if that happens? What do we do? What if persecution begins? What if some of us die? What are we going to do? Well, you know, you can be a Christian under a socialist government. You could be a Christian under a Marxist government. It won't be pleasant. But the Bible tells us that we are supposed to obey. Look at Romans 13. It says, there's no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whoever resists the power of God, resists the ordinance of God, they that resist shall receive damnation. When he wrote that, Nero was the emperor of the world. Now, we ought to obey God rather than man, but we are supposed to obey the government. No power but of God. We're to pray for them. First of all, supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men. All that are in authority. What? We're to pray for that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. This is good and acceptable in the word of God. So you pray for them. Jude says we're to let the Lord rebuke them. One of the marks of an apostate is people who do what? They speak evil of dignitaries. Now, I got three more pointing back at me. I don't like the present administration. But the devil quarreled, and Michael said, the Lord rebuke you. He would not even blaspheme, that's the word, revile the devil. He wouldn't even blaspheme the devil. We need to watch our emails. We need to watch what we say about the present administration. Because you remember when Paul was there, he said, it's written, thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people. So I didn't know he was the high priest. It's written, not to speak evil of those people. And real quickly, I just want to read this, and then I'm going to have to quit. My time's up. You just don't listen fast enough. Fret not thyself because of evildoers. Be not envious among the workers of iniquity. They'll soon be cut down like the grass and where the grass herb. Trust in the Lord. Next one, delight yourself in the Lord. Commit your way unto the Lord. Rest in the Lord. Wait patiently for him. Cease from anger. Forsake wrath. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. Why? Evildoers are going to be cut off. But those that wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. In fact, he says, the meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. And the last verse says in verse 13, the Lord shall laugh at him, for he seeth that his day is coming. God's going to punish the wicked. And remember Daniel 2:21, God's sovereign. He removes kings and he sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to them that have understanding. He did defeat Egypt and the Philistines and Syria and Assyria and Edom and Babylon and Persia and the Greeks and the Romans. And God can give us freedom. Daniel says that old king said, the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will. That's what that pagan king said. God is in control. He does see, he does hear, he does care. And when Herod gets too high of himself and begins to speak with great oratory and they say, this is the voice of a god, God lets him be eaten of worms. The angel of the Lord encamps around about them that fear him and delivers them. So what you got to ask is yourself this question. Are you the righteous that's going to be delivered? Or are you the wicked that God is reserving for judgment? Fear not him who can destroy the body and cannot kill the soul. But fear him who can destroy both body and soul in hell. Draw nigh unto God, he'll draw nigh unto you. I'll never leave thee for nor forsake thee. And the church was persecuted, but I want you to keep in mind that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. And if we die, we die. And individually, we're going to be judged. And we're either going to be reserved for judgment, or we're going to that place where God has reserved for those who love him and keep his commandments. God bless.